It's called This Is the Place. This is the place in the northwest of England. It's ace, it's the best, and the songs that we sing from the stands from our band set the whole planet shaking. Our inventions are legends. There's nought we can't make. And so we make brilliant music. We make brilliant bands. We make goals that make souls leap from seats in the stands. And we make things from steel. We make things from cotton. We make people laugh, take that, mix some at rotten. And we make you at home. We make you feel welcome. We make some happen. We can't seem to help it. And if you're looking for history, then yes, we've a wealth. But the Manchester way is to make it yourself. And make us a record. A new number one, and make us a brew while you're up, love, go on, and make us feel proud that you're winning the league, and make us sing louder, and make us believe it, that this is the place that has helped shape the world, and that this is a place where a Manchester girl named of Emmeline Pankhurst from the streets of Moss Side. From the streets of Moss Side led a suffragette city with sisterhood pride. And this is the place with appliance of science. We're on it, atomic. We struck with defiance in the face of a challenge. We always stand tall. Mancunians in union delivered it all, such as housing and libraries and health, education and unions and co-ops, the first railway station. So we're sorry. Bear with us. We invented commuters. But we hope you forgive us. We invented computers. And this is the place. This is the place Henry Royce strolled with Rolls, and we've rocked and we've rolled with our own northern soul. And so this is the place to do business then dance. Where go-getters and goal-setters know they've a chance. And this is the place where we first played as kids. And my mum lived and died here. She loved it. She did. And this is the place where our folks came to work, where they struggled in puddles, they hurt in the dirt, and they built us a city. They built us these towns, and they coughed on the cobbles to the deafening sound of the steaming machines and the screaming of slaves. They were scheming for greatness. They dreamed to their graves, and they left us a spirit. They left us a vibe, that Mancunian way to survive and to thrive and to work and to build and to connect and create. And Greater Manchester's greatness is keeping it great. And so this is the place now with kids of our own. Some are born here, some drawn here, but we all call it home. And they've covered the cobbles, but they'll never defeat all the dreamers and schemers who still team through these streets, because this is a place that has been through some hard times, oppressions, recessions, depressions and dark times, but we keep fighting back with Greater Manchester spirit, northern grit, northern wit and Greater Manchester lyrics in these hard times again. And there's hard times again. There's hard times again in these streets of our city. But we won't take defeat. And we don't want your pity, because this is the place where we stand strong together with a smile on our face, Mancunians forever. Because this is the place in our hearts, in our homes. Because this is the place that's a part of our bones. Because Manchester gives us such strength from the fact that this is the place. We should give something back. Always remember. Never forget. Forever Manchester. Choose love, Manchester. Thank you.
tell you about today's show, Soho. My first guest is fabulous actor, writer and director Raffaello De Gratola. Raff will be telling us about his new projects, Tremor Cordis and No Way Home, and about working with my hairdresser, Michael Douglas, in his new release, Unlocked. And in the second hour, we'll be joined by the beautiful, iconic Mary Wilson. Mary has a very special concert coming up, the 35th anniversary gig, and she'll be here to tell us all about it. So please join in. We would love to hear from you. Tweet at Soho Radio and at BB Lynch. Tweet and say hello, or tweet and tell us just what you've always wanted. Soho on Soho Radio, SohoRadioLondon.com. And we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio London. That was signed, sealed, delivered, I'm Yours by, oh, I think it was Stevie Wonder. Guess what? Our first guest is here, and he was just on his phone to his agent saying, why on earth did you give me this booking? Can we give Raff some headphones, please? Headphones. Welcome back, actor, writer, director and friend of show, yeah. Raffaello De Gratola. I never get your name right, do I?
Perfect.
Was it?
Perfectly perfect. Done.
Can I call you John, though, throughout?
How about Rafe?
Rafe. No, you're Raff. Can you hear me without the thingies?
Okay.
We'll get you some thingies. How are you?
I'm all right, yeah. Thanks for having me back again. It's been a while.
Do you know what? I was looking through old shows. It was about 2015.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just after
Flynn came out.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Tell people what Flynn was about. I love Flynn.
I actually just had a review of it yesterday on a site called Boom Film Reviews.
Funny enough,
2 years later, I think it sort of just helps with...
what you're doing now.
Well, that, as well as getting it out there. And, you know, film these days, independent film is all about people knowing about it before they see it. So you've got to get it out there somehow. You know, big companies have lots of money to spend on marketing.
Yeah.
Smaller independent films struggle with that. We rely on social media, people picking it up. Does it build momentum? You know, and a lot of the interesting works and ideas comes from low budget films because they're less corrupted by corporate minds. If that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense. You've got complete content control and nothing is diluted.
Exactly.
Flynn was so hilarious, but also with a real tinge of
cringe.
Kind of, no, a tinge of cringe. that's my book title.
Oh, yeah.
No, but also a tinge of cringe, but also just really, it was sad. And you do multi-layered well.
We try. Yeah. I think we are all multi-layered. So just to do one comedy piece would have been a specific piece. And I don't think it would have been recognised as much as it was if we hadn't put more layers behind it, which we tried to do.
So if you've got this review now, so things could stir up even 2 years after the event?
It always does. I mean, people, you know, connect with it. And it's just about people remembering it's out there. It's on, you know, iTunes, Amazon, Vimeo. I think Vimeo is the best deal you can get on it. There's a lot of, you know, good actors in it, and they're excellent, actually. So,
well, and we'll talk about some of your actors later, because you've got a special favourite. She's my favourite as well. So you've got so much going on right now. Let's start with Fremme Cordis, which is a story of immigration, social displacement and forbidden love. Mm-hmm. Tell us more about the film.
It originated from an Italian story.
Yeah.
From the 70s. I've got my headphones now, so everything's
going to go
right.
You can take those home as well.
I need them today because it's so cold. Italian story of immigrants coming here for a better life and falling in love early in life, and then things go wrong when they come to a new country looking for opportunities, etc.
Yeah.
But because of budget, I made it a contemporary piece about a young Italian waiter who meets a young Chinese, Anglo-Chinese girl.
Hang on one second, what is that?
Sorry, that's my tummy.
Yeah, please eat next time. What was that?
It's fine, I think it really is.
Oh, okay. Yeah, go on, so an Italian man.
Italian man meets a young Anglo Chinese girl,
and she's so good looking.
Christina Chong.
Yeah,
she's really incredible as an actor. And
I went straight into how she looks.
Yeah, you're sold. You bought the ticket on looks.
She's so good, and she's got freckles. And I love anyone with freckles. Yeah, although hers are controlled, mine are out of control. So what happens with them?
Well, I think you've obviously seen it.
I've seen the trailer.
They fall in love, she becomes pregnant, and she doesn't know whether to have the baby or not because it's so early on. She doesn't tell anybody. She tries to tell her mother, who's dysfunctional. When she goes to tell her, she realises, I can't put that on her. She can't deal with it. She needs my help more than I need hers.
Yeah.
So we left it ambiguous whether she decided to keep the baby or not at this point for this short. And he doesn't even know about it. So she doesn't even know whether to tell the guy because the relationship is so new. Her father is a traditional Chinese man.
Who won't approve.
Who wouldn't approve, wants her to go back to the Chinese culture. And his culture is Italian. So there's so many clashes, but it's all about, you know, today's society, how we make things work rather than how we make things not work.
Well, I mean, do we talk about Manchester now?
Please.
Hang on. Rach, I'm doing something you're not supposed to do in a studio. I'm going to do it. Can I help you? Am I needing something?
You all need to come closer to the mic.
Right, that's all you say.
Okay. Me?
Yeah.
Then we'll do it. Great. Fine, thank
Sorry.
You. Sorry about that, everyone.
So shall I repeat everything?
Yeah, could you?
No, I'm just
lost. I mean, you really draw on stuff that's going on. So another of your shorts, No Way Home, is about prostitution and slavery. We'll talk about that more. But something like Manchester, does that inspire you, or does that horrify you so much you can't go near it? Does it shut you down?
I mean, I'm utterly not inspired. I'm utterly disgusted. I've never seen such a low level of cowardice that somebody actually went to a young person's children's concert to kill them from the dark, just shows up and does it indiscriminately.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the lowest point of humanity right there for me.
And is that in any way tempered by the great shows of humanity that we saw after? That story of the homeless man who went in there and cradled dying
people
and pulled bullets out of children's faces.
And just did it out of purely knowing what the difference is between right and wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, we cannot emphasise enough what cowards these people are. They're hiding in the dark. They think that is the right thing to do. And you know deep down, they can't be really thinking that.
But how do they? How does a head get to that stage where you accept that?
We don't know because we're not in that world. But something has to be done.
Would there be something in... I mean, of course, it's never going to happen because invariably they're suicide bombers. But there is something in... Sitting someone, not sitting someone down, because that sounds so liberal that, you know, you'd get lynched for saying that, but, you know, liberal lynched. Bless you. But that, don't do it again. But that whole thing of finding out what, you know, what pushed you, what made you do that. So it's almost like opportunity is taken to get any kind of answer afterwards, isn't it?
Well, it's a good question. I'll bring something up there. But the first things first is whoever the authorities think they need to investigate. They need more laws, I think, to be able to get hold of these people.
Because he was on the radar, wasn't he?
He was on the radar. He should have... I mean, tag him. If he's on the radar, tag him. Tag them. Because the police aren't just putting people on the radar for the sake of it. They have something that gives them the belief that this person isn't quite right at the moment. So let's take this further.
And there's something kind of which I guess would feel reassuring, but actually is more terrifying. The fact that... instantly they did go after I think it's 8 people right now that have been arrested, so you know you can't suddenly within 2-3 days find out who those people are. So again, all those people must have been on
the radar. I'd be interested to know if they were. I mean, if they were, you know,
well, let's ask America, because New York Times seems to be getting all our intelligence, which is a fucking disgrace. Yeah. But yeah, sorry everyone, but it's, you know, how does that happen? I don't know.
Yeah.
But
we need to protect our country. We need to protect our children. That is the heart of us, and you know, and doing that, we bring everyone together, and we bring the good, you know, the good people of the Muslim community together with us, because
have been extraordinary in Manchester and have made the statements. When everyone says, "Oh, you know, no one in that society is coming up with any," you know, they're not condemning it. Yes, they are. The statements of the Muslim Council of Britain was straight away out there.
It's just not part of Islam. Mm. I mean, it's just a joke that they're using that as an umbrella.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's so upsetting, wasn't it?
It is horrendous beyond words. So, you know, but interestingly enough, there was on No Way Home, I used a friend of mine who used to work at Scotland Yard in the counterterrorism department, who's now retired and wants to remain nameless. But
name them.
Yeah. He was on the set of No Way Home. He sort of gave us the realistic angle of what it's like on the streets. And I'm sure he's got stories about, you know.
Yeah. Let's. We're going to talk about No Way Home after. I just pointed at you in quite a threatening way. Sorry about that, Raf.
Right. I can deal with it.
So such a pointer. Sometimes I wink. I might do that in a minute.
Winking is misleading sometimes.
Is it misleading? Yeah. You're saying I'm a tease? What is that? what's that?
If someone winks at me, I'm like, okay, here we go.
Yeah. Okay, no winking. Could we have...
Point at me, Jesus. Throw something.
We're going to have Detroit Spinners and It's a Shame, mainly because I love this song. I wrote this one.
Won't appreciate the love we try.
It's a shame, the Detroit Spinners, the Detroit Spinners. I think I might just chucked in a Z then. I'm Bebe Lynch. This is Bebe Does Soho on Soho Radio. And I'm joined in the studio by actor and filmmaker. You've got lovely hair, Raphael.
It's really not worked on at all. It's getting up from the pillow.
What? You don't use product?
My product is whatever's on the pillow.
So my... A little chocolate mint. My sister told me the funniest thing the other day, which I'm sure I'm not allowed to repeat. Her boys were being naughty, and she threatened them with taking away their hair products. They're 33. No, they're not. You know who I love? You, obviously, and producer Ellie, to my right. So Camille Cadori, who you work with. So I went to school with Camille. I know I say this every time. Yeah. And you know, it just thrills me.
I'm hoping she's listening now.
Oh, hi.
Because I think she's far away on something today.
Is she?
Yeah.
Well, hello, Camille. And you won't remember me, but I remember you because you were lovely and brilliant at school. And you still got those legs. Oh, my goodness. I'm obsessed with women. She's so incredible.
She's brilliant. Actually, every time I do something, I think, so first port of call is Camille Cadori, or Simone, my wife.
Yeah.
And I know once they're on
well
board...
Well saved.
Yeah. Well, I know, really, as actors, though, they are top-notch.
Yeah.
And once they're on board, I know that I'm going to already have a good chance at making something decent, because they bring so much to the project.
Yeah.
And what I love about them is that, you know, they're more mature women, they've lived a life, and they bring that to the piece.
And they make it so real. I know it's kind of an overused word, but actually it's underused in performance sometimes. You know,
absolutely.
There's no affectation. So the scene in Tremacordis where the girl goes home to tell her mom
who's that, white, by the way, and the father's Chinese.
And Camille is just incredible
And she went for it. And I said, I remember saying, you know, act as if you've had a couple of drinks and you're trying to hide it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden this monologue comes out that you're not even aware of. And she just went for it. It was a really incredible cinematic performance.
Yeah.
I mean, so real, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think she's genuinely brilliant.
A brilliant actor.
But you bring that out as well. There's obviously a lovely working relationship between you two and with Simone that you know. Is it hard working with your wife?
Not really. I mean, she's got so much experience. It's easier, to be honest. It's easier because all the rubbish is doesn't mean anything in there. We know each other.
Yeah.
Like I know Cammy, there's a connection underneath the work that we don't have to think about. So it's straight into how do we make this.
But that works. But you and Simone would know Raph and Simone. You're playing different characters. So are you responding to each other to Raph and Simone, whereas the character wouldn't be that?
Well, you always think you bring your truth to something, and you always bring your truth to the context of the story, and then you become that character. So there are many layers to becoming a character, especially if you want to portray them realistically and on camera. That's, you know, you can't lie, really, if you want to do a good job.
So No Way Home, and I'm annoyed with you, and I'll tell you for why. It's only 3 minutes.
Yep.
You've got to make that, you know, a 3-day film.
It's
so extraordinary. So it's a misled young teenager caught up in a horrifying modern-day slavery situation and forced to prostitute herself against her will. And Raph, you are terrifying. Why are you so mean?
It's a good question. I think because these people are me, and I have to try and find a way to portray that without any empathy for these girls, because again, it's another situation in our society we don't understand, where people don't have empathy for these women, sometimes men, that they're basically kidnapping and putting on the streets.
So what's the story here?
Well, the brief was to tell a story in your area of how human trafficking affects your surroundings. And so, interestingly, now that we were talking about Camille, the lead girl is Camille's daughter.
I know, and I saw the name, and I was like, oh, it has to be her.
Yeah, Rosa, and the other girl, Arabella, and I thought they were both fantastic and really came with a lot of emotion without doing too much.
And so who were you commissioned by? Who was the brief boss?
It was a freedom project called Herd, and they were in conjunction with CNN, and it was a worldwide competition, and I submitted it, and we won it.
You won it?
Yeah, we won it.
There were
submissions from all around the world. I think South Africa may have come second, and I can't remember which other countries were in there, but yeah, there were some amazing judges as well, and so we were really happy with that. It was on ABC News in the United States last week, and I'm really pleased with that piece, because in 3 minutes we were able to tell such a strong emotive story and leave people thinking about what trafficking is, because really before that I didn't really understand it. I was like, how can you be trafficked? You just have to put your hand up and say, somebody's help, kidnapped me. It doesn't work like that. They've got you emotionally, they've got everything about you. The girls fear that they're either their families are going to be killed back home, or they can't do anything, they're going to get caught. Many fear stories, and this is what the policeman was informing us, and so really they're trapped. They're really trapped.
Is there any Stockholm syndrome in there as well? Do they actually fall for the people?
Yeah, I think we talked a bit about that. There is part of that in the end. Something develops, but at the end of the day, they're victims.
So No Way Home was so extraordinary because it was just that you're straight into it. There's no beginning you're just straight into it, and you're like, this is horrible, and I want to know what happened, but
I want to write a feature.
Yeah, you
and
have
I've already
to.
Started jotting some ideas down, and I'm speaking to this lady who wrote a book about what it was like to work on the streets. She's now a mother and has three children, and her kids, one of her kids is a fantastic actor, and she's in Tremacordis, actually. She plays the girl on the wall, the sister.
She's cool.
She's brilliant. So I'm getting a lot of help, and so I'm hoping to write something quite interesting soon. No Way Home, incidentally, you can watch online now. It's on Vimeo.
Get to see these.
They
can
see it, or they can see it on ABC News in the United
States.
And
you must, everyone, because, Raph's brilliant. So you're writing and directing and acting in all these, and it's incredible.
It's only because I haven't got a budget.
Also, you're the best man for the job. Jesus, Raph, get on my side here. But also, the production values, they look like incredible films. There's nothing... there's nothing wrong with low budget. I quite like that sensibility too, but they just look incredible.
That is one of the things we speak about before we take it on with Simon, who brought his equipment and DP'd it. I really like shooting at night. I've just done something else called Charing Cross for Raindance China with Christina Chong and her boyfriend Iggy. Wanted to shoot it at night, and we shot it at night, and it looks amazing. So for me, as a filmmaker, if I'm making something, it doesn't matter what the budget is, but within the frame, it has to look like it can stand up in the cinema, projected on a big screen, and nobody's going to think that was made for $2.50.
Yeah, and it's...
Yeah.
Well, it does. You job well done there. Have you seen Three Girls? The TV show. Well, I'm going to talk about it without even watching it. That was about the case in Rochdale, again with the prostitution.
Oh, right,
and the poor children were handed around. You know,
that is just another horrendous. I mean, the topics today are just fun, aren't
they? Yeah, about it. Well, that's what I was going to say.
I didn't see it though.
When are we going to do it? No. So I was just going to ask. Not that you were inspired by it. It must have resonated after No Way Home. Are you tempted to kind of just do like a musical? To kind of get away from this stuff, because you have done some very hard-hitting stuff.
Yeah, I think the point is, after Flim, I had so much fun making that. I mean, we laughed, the gag reel's like, 2 hours long.
I actually wanted to do some drama.
So Flim's, tell the story, tell Pracy what Flim is.
Flim is about a guy from India who has always dreamed to be a filmmaker, and he comes to London, meets beautiful woman, they get married, but she's rich. So he tries to take the money from the father, he doesn't give it, he finds an accountant who helps him make the filming, he doesn't actually make the filming, an amateur documentary crew comes along to film him, and in the end, when the police arrest him, they take the footage from the crew and they use it against him in a court of law for sexual harassment. But he's actually a really nice guy, to be honest with you. And it wasn't about that. It was all about making a fantastic film. And, you know, but, you know, some interesting lessons in there. And he messed up a little bit, as we all do in life. But he stood up on his feet and he made something interesting. And in the end, he didn't make a film. But the amateur documentary team made a fantastic film. And I'm the star of it.
Jesus, I can't breathe.
So anyway, here we are talking about it 2 years later.
Oh, no, I can't breathe. Oh. We're going to have a song and then we're going to talk about Unlocked.
Unlocked,
yeah. Producer Ellie, to my right, could we please play De Influence and Good For We?
Great tracks today.
Children and starvation, wasting the time.
luckily none of you had to hear me sing along to that.
I did.
Good for, sorry about that. Good for we de-influence. I love de-influence. So, Raph, hi.
Hello.
Ciao.
Hello.
You're also in...
Hello, BB.
Hello, hello. You're also in Unlocked.
Yeah.
With my hairdresser, Michael Douglas. My hairdresser's called Michael Douglas.
Brilliant.
It is brilliant, isn't
brilliant,
it?
Brilliant, brilliant. What does he look like?
Not Michael Douglas.
Right.
He's very handsome. Yeah, good-looking boy. Hi, Michael. I need
well,
a
actually, I've got to say, I think Michael Douglas is very handsome, the actor, isn't he?
You're Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
Yeah, he
not
is.
Not mine, but the one who was in the film that I was in. But,
did
yeah.
you did you do any stuff with him? Did you meet him?
I didn't. He was on set the day I was on set. One of the days I was on set, I worked with John Malkovich
yes.
and some of the other team. Yeah.
What was John Malkovich like?
Just a very normal human being and an extraordinary actor.
Is it disappointing that he's a normal human being? Wouldn't you want him to be a little bit crazy? I would.
I was a bit scared because I thought all I could think of was that movie he did, In the Line of Fire, I think it was called, with Clint Eastwood, when he played that assassin. So he, that's, you know, I grew up on movies, so I'm thinking, oh my God, that's the dude in The Line of Fire that I'm acting. I felt like stopping and seeing, he goes, sorry, man, you were amazing in the line.
Have you ever done it? Have you ever been a fanboy?
I actually switch off from that when I'm working because I know, you know, you've got to focus on what you're doing. But yeah, I mean, there's some actors out there that I'm really like, wow.
Who?
You've inspired me. Christopher Walken is one of my favourites. The usual people that we know from... I mean, my favourite cinema is sort of New York 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
I talked about this with my friend Lee the other day. All those movies, the actors were so committed to... I mean, if you want to see an incredible performance, let's talk about that. Christopher Walken in The Deer Hunter. I mean, I can't even speak. The guy's incredible. The level of commitment that I don't see today. It's incredible. And these people weren't... They weren't people that went on talk shows much.
Yeah,
they didn't really know how to do
mystery.
That. They just were so committed to their craft. Today it's more a package, you know, people make it, but they have to be good in interviews and social media and whatever. But then it really was true. You know, it's limited now and there are people like that. But the commitment of the actors in that era was something else. Walken, De Niro in that era.
Yeah.
Michael Cimino, who directed The Deer Hunter. These are all films that inspired me. Midnight Express,
yeah.
The guy, the lead in that, he died after that movie. There was a German film that I saw.
Why did he die after the film?
What, in Midnight Express? I think he got AIDS and died.
Oh.
Yeah, but his performance was actually, his performance inspired me to continue with this business, that guy.
So you had a stage
Billy
where
Hell,
you were going to give up?
I just didn't know what I wanted to do in my life at that age. I was around 16, I think, 17. I'd come out of stage school and I thought, what am I going to do? And then I remembered why I loved it so much when you know, the business is one thing. Taking on the role of an actor is something else. And if you get amazing material, you are a happy person as an actor. Doesn't matter how much you're getting paid.
Yeah.
You don't have to be paid, actually, is the truth of it.
Don't
if it's
say
amazing.
That out loud.
No, you don't want to say that. But partly one of the reasons I started writing and making my own stuff is because it gives you a little bit of control. As an actor, you don't have that much control unless you have profile,
yeah.
Then maybe a bit more. So it gives you that element of, oh, I feel slightly more in charge of my creative process as an artist does who draws,
yeah.
Because you can sit in a room and start drawing, yeah. Or a writer can write. It gives you a place to go with your mind, with your creative mind. Whereas as an actor, you go in the room, you offer it up, and they decide.
And even where they, even how they edit it, I guess, you know, the scenes that are in and not. Do you find it frustrating then, because you are, I mean, you're the triple threat, but not in the conventional sense, unless of course you can sing and dance. Can you sing and dance?
I can
in
my bedroom. I think I can. Nobody else does.
But to be able to write and direct and act, is it then super frustrating to go on set and be directed?
Not at all, no.
You give into that?
Oh, totally, yeah. I mean, unless they really don't know what they're doing, most directors have got a vision, and I like to find that with them because it's their piece. It's a collaborative thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to please. I want to do a good job, but I want to find out what they're trying to say so that I can form into that, you know?
And of course, your lovely Simone is in The Lock, which is coming out on ITV on June 11th.
Yep.
And Skye, your daughter's in Beauty and the Beast. So be honest with me now. So when you're all at home and someone gets the call about a good gig, do you have to set your face? Like,
no,
that's brilliant, darling.
That is just ridiculous.
Come on, that's exactly what me and Ellie would be like.
No, we're just... our biggest nightmare is logistics, which is if someone's working, hopefully someone else isn't, so that we can run the duties. And, you know, Skye's obviously bringing up a child is
how old
takes
Skye?
Responsibility. She's 11. She's in Granchester at the moment. She plays Robson's daughter, Esme.
Really? Yeah, so yeah. She was in Flim as well, wasn't she?
She was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She was really funny in that. Actually, she played Ravi's daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
And Shelley Conn's daughter, who played my wife.
So you haven't wanted to deter her from going on the stage?
Not deter her, but we're not really pushing. It just seems to be happening naturally. Yeah. But she's, you know, she's having a normal upbringing.
Oh, Skye's such a lovely name. How did you choose the name Skye?
The Isle of Skye.
Yeah.
And so it's actually Skye Lucia. So Lucia's the Italian part, Skye's the Scottish part, and it's actually Skye Lucia Natalia.
Oh my God, isn't that gorgeous?
Your
really?
Niece is called Lucia. My niece isn't.
Well, are you Italian?
Yeah.
Are you?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Where's your family from?
Amalfi.
So near us. We're an hour away from each other.
You're all right, kids. I'm in the room.
We're probably related.
Scusa, adesso parliamo italiano.
Yeah, well, German, the language of love. Oh, I didn't know you were Italian. You haven't got my card. Look at me.
Si vede subito.
Number four.
Number four in the line.
What a bitch. Already getting you sacked for something you did
about
earlier.
Me, so.
Well, I choose not to know about you.
You should do your own radio show between you two.
No, no, I'm not encouraging her. I'm giving her no more success. I'll have that necklace, though.
You can have it anytime.
Thank you, darling. thank you, darling.
It's taken from the Amalfi.
Amalfi's so incredible.
Yeah.
Wow.
We'll all go. Speak Italian?
No. Okay. My grandparents do, like, they hardly speak any English, but I don't.
You've got Italian eyebrows.
Yeah,
amazing.
I know.
Amazing.
At school, you used to get bullied for them. They used
what?
To go, oh, you've got pointy eyebrows. But now they're all looking at me going, we have to tattoo ours. And I'm like,
have some of these bushy things.
There's a whole new film.
Amalfi eyebrows.
Amalfi eyebrows. So gorgeous.
It's the shape of Amalfi, actually, that eyebrow. We all have them. We love them. Mine sort of morph into my eyelids.
Can we move on?
Yeah.
Raf, what's next for you?
I'm just editing this rain dance thing that I did with Christina Chong called Charing Cross. I think that's what it's called now. And we looked at that last night.
What so might it be called?
It could be called any street around Charing Cross.
That's not so catchy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's a reason for it. The cross is a love. There's a love
Aww.
And a no in there. Oh.
And tell us how we can see Tremacordis and No Way Home again.
Well, they're on Vimeo.
Yeah.
They're in the world of Vimeo on this planet, the best distribution service for independent filmmakers.
And your T-shirt says that as well. No, he's not publicising them at all. We should all go to Italy. I'm not even joking.
I'm going next week.
What? Are you?
I'm going to Sicily.
I actually know nothing about you.
No.
But Ellie...
You never ask. I know everything about you, but you never ask
about because
me.
I tell you. Because I've got a mic.
Sicily is supposed to be amazing. I've actually never been that far down.
No, I'm going to try it out.
Yeah.
Try
You're going to love
it. Try
You're
it
gonna
out.
You're
going
to love it.
So, Raf, we were talking about Manchester, you know, obviously. Well, Ellie and I, when we came in, Ellie and I were talking about it and how it's upset people and why it's upset everyone. And... You were saying that you know someone.
I don't personally, but my friend Lee Boardman and Jennifer Boardman run a theatre school there near Manchester at the weekends. And one of the students, I think, I don't know too much detail, but I think she's around the 13-year-old mark, was there. Her friend has died, as far as I know. And Freya is still in hospital, possibly... I think she still may be in intensive care, but I don't want to get the details wrong. That was Lee who was speaking before. And so I just really want to say that even though we don't know her, we're all thinking about her, her family, and everyone else up there who's suffered from this atrocity. You know, everyone in this country is really, our hearts are there, aren't they?
I think so. And there's something about, have you been to Manchester?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, yep. It's an incredible city,
it's
isn't
amazing.
It?
Absolutely amazing.
I lived there for a year and I never thought I'd leave London. And I felt like, because London's the love of my life, but I felt like Manchester was my real summer holiday romance.
Really?
Yeah. And she certainly left a mark. And there's something about, I mean, the people are incredible. It's just you feel so, you know, boring saying the same thing about them because they are incredible. But I was blown away as well by the architecture there and just the... There's a certain light at a certain time of day that makes the buildings gold.
Right.
And it's... And got a real New York feel, the Northern Quarter. And they
that.
Film there. They film there as if it's New York.
Yeah.
So lots of filming's done there.
Yeah.
It's an incredible city. And
and amazing people, actually.
Yeah,
every
totally.
Time I go up, I think, wow, everyone's really nice here. And, I mean, I don't get to go up that often, unfortunately, but I've got a couple of very close friends up there. And I just find it, you know, amazing. And obviously... We keep repeating ourselves. Utterly tragic.
Utterly what's tragic. Happened. And I think, there is something in, and as we were saying, the horror, but there's, and also there's something going around on Twitter at the moment that's viral of this man that was giving blood and his interview. And again, there is so much preaching for love as opposed to hate, which is going to be the, you guess the natural response, don't you?
Or
the knee jerk, but. That's kind of not
well,
happening.
He finished that that poem with choose love, and that really is the answer, isn't it? That's the only way we can move forward as society is to choose love, because hate is wrong in every form.
How would the Muslim Church, the Muslim Council of Britain address this further? What do they do?
Well, I mean, I think they're doing everything they can, really, as far as we know, is, you know, reporting anyone they think whose ideology has changed from the right ideology. And they're coming forward now with, you know, statements making it utterly clear that they're not part of their faith.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's only so much more they can do that we can't, which is... We, as a society, need to come forward if we have suspicions. That's how we're going to get these people, is if you have suspicions about somebody, just call the authorities, let them decide. They'll figure it out. That's how we're going to get them. There might be, you were saying, 36,000 of them. That's a lot.
36,
but there's 70 million or so people in this country.
36,000 people what?
Download the ISIS package off the website. Yeah, it's terrible.
And everyone knows that?
The police know that, yeah. They know about the 36,000.
See, Michael...
Most of them are watched, but we haven't got enough people to watch 36,000 all the time. So some people get off lightly, you know?
My question there is, I mean, I'm not a technical wizard, but how is this, whatever it is, on a site up there?
Mm.
Why is it not taken down?
Mm.
Why is it there? Why can people download it? It shouldn't be there. Take it down. Find a way to do it. There must be a way.
Well, how is it? How is it up there?
I don't know.
Because there's freedom of speech and there's pushing hate. And is it code? Not coded, but is it just, you know, is
no,
it not blatant?
I'm
I mean,
again,
I didn't
not
even...
A technical. I don't understand.
But the document
simple,
itself.
If I said to, if my daughter were here, she'd say, why is it up there, Dad? And it's a simple question.
Yeah.
Why is it there? Take it down. You know, these people shouldn't be reading that kind of... material of hate, so find a way to take it down.
It is extraordinary. It's what happened. My one of my brothers has moved up to Manchester recently as well, and I got the absolute fit. And you know, I hate it when everyone's got a connection and it feels like a kind of trumping thing, and it's, you know, what I mean. But there was this, I was like, oh blimey, he's just moved up there and he works on kind of rigging and setting up venues like music events. So, you know, you just think, please God, do not let be the time. This is the time. Why I say please God, I mean, we could start a whole new thing on God obviously not existing. You know, anyone throwing that name around now, which is what I'm doing, and I apologise because there's no point. But I had the fear of that with John, and I kind of sent him a little text, and I got a text at 3 a.m. in the morning. Like, 3 a.m, you don't leave me waiting that long. Absolutely terrifying. Mm. Raf, I'm going to give out your details, and then we're going to go to, there's a 1 minute silence, isn't there? So for updates on all Raf's amazing work, please follow him on Twitter at Raf Degretolo, and I'll spell that for people like me who have no idea. Raf, R-A-F-F, D-E-G-R-U-T-T-O-L-A. So there's a 1 minute silence across the country. It's coming up at 11, when we're all going to be observing the silence to remember the victims of the bombing at Manchester Arena on Monday, for the people that died, the people that are injured, and the families and everyone involved. And I guess a huge thank you to all the emergency services who were extraordinary. I mean, what a night for them. And yeah, so this is to Manchester.
Phoebe Does Soho. With Phoebe Lynch.
I Can't Get Next to You, The Temptations. Welcome to the second hour of BB Does Soho. I'm BB Lynch and you're listening to Soho Radio, sohoradiolondon.com. And we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio London. Coming to you from our beautifully bijou coffee bar and studio on Great Wimmer Street. Except now we've got T-shirts, Ellie.
Yeah, it's a family store.
It's a family store.
Yeah.
I don't have a family.
Yes, you do.
Get out the store.
I see you do. What happened? You're Uncle BB, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, I am Uncle BB. Or Boozy Lunch. I'm going to get that child. Yeah, come down and say hello. If you're too shy, say hi. Tweet us at Soho Radio or at BB Lynch. We would love to hear from you. So we just heard from the brilliant Raffaello De Gratola. I love him so much. And his work really is, he's so talented. And he's so creepy in no way. I mean, and I say that with love, but oh my God, it freaked me out in it. And you've got to go and look. So what, Vimeo, just go on Vimeo. It sounds like Vimto, but it's not Vimto, it's Vimeo. And check out his stuff. It's brilliant. And in a few minutes, friend of show and legend, Mary Wilson will be here to tell us about her 35th anniversary concert. But first, let me give you a little plug. This is a must-see, must-hear. So brilliant jazz vocalist Adana Minghella is playing Soho's Pizza Express Jazz Club on June 13 with a fabulous new set called From Ella to Elvis. Songs of love and longing to upbeat classics. And there's jazz standards. So it's Ella, Peggy Lee, and then it's to Dylan, Lennon McCartney and Elvis. And the Elvis song is a significant one. Adana used to play it on her guitar when she was a kid, and her brother, the incredible film director, Oscar winner Anthony Minghella, loved hearing her sing it so much. He featured it in one of his screenplays, which is so cute. Living with Dinosaurs, which was a TV collaboration he did with Jim Henson. And she won't tell me what the song is, the tease. I love a tease. But it will be a great night. night. We're going along, and she's been called a flawless, stylish and captivating singer, and she really is. And her brilliant band includes Mark Edwards, Pete Maxfield and Lee Goodall. So see you there. So for tickets, go to pizzaexpresslive.com or call 0207-439-4962. Ellie, do you think I should get some sex line work? I gave out that number in quite...
Yeah.
Okay. Let's have a song.
Yeah.
And then you know who's turning up, coming in. I can't wait. Come on, everyone. Come on. Get it. Energy. Hi, Joe Good. Just What I've Always Wanted by Mary Wilson. Oh, my God. She's only here.
I'm only here.
You're only here. Where have you been in my life?
Just been at home and I got the tube here.
Oh, how is home?
Home's really lovely because we've been sitting in the garden.
Have you?
Yes, we had a nice glass of rosé the other evening.
This morning.
Yeah, no, that was vodka, I think, this morning.
Oh, good girl.
And I tell you what, actually, I've had two friends staying.
Yeah.
One of them, yeah, I was a nanny to when I was 18 in New York. I was
what?
A nanny to three little girls. They were 2, 4, and 6. And the 2-year-old is now 46.
Wow.
And of course, I'm
well,
still
hang on,
only...
you're 35.
I know. I don't know how that works. But, and I still feel like her. We cuddle all the time. It's ridiculous.
Oh.
And they came for, they were here for four days. Was it 3 days? And they went to Paris yesterday. And
that's
yeah,
so
they,
lovely.
They're New Yorkers.
You kept in touch.
I know. I'm in touch with all three of them. You
so
know.
You weren't a nasty nanny?
No, I was very nice.
Really?
I was. They bought me, they were the first people to buy me a guitar. The people that I, you know, the parents bought me a guitar and I had guitar lessons and I used to do Killing Me Softly, apparently.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a really fantastic time because it was 1973 when I went there and people didn't really travel in that way. Not then, you know, that was way before.
Brave thing to do.
In a way, I suppose it was, you know, and I remember so many people coming to see me off at the airport. I mean, it wouldn't really happen now, but I had the people that I used to babysit for here. They came with their kids, my brother, my sister, my mum, my dad, some of my girlfriends all came to see me off because it was a big deal.
It's almost like they were happy to see you go.
Well, yeah. Well, actually, my best friend Diana said that that night, she went round to my house and my mum was all sad.
Oh.
Yeah. My dad went to a boxing match.
Oh, dad was okay about it, yeah.
So he was fine. But my mum was a bit upset, but she didn't show it at the airport.
Oh.
Oh, all that time ago. So, yeah, so that's been really lovely. And we were just talking about stuff. She said, do you know what you always used to say that we thought was funny? You always used to say, I'll do it straight away. Straight away. You think, why does she say straight away? Americans don't say that, apparently.
What do they say?
I don't know. Now.
Now. And did you do it straight away?
Always.
Always.
No, the Americans must have, the Americans must have had longer, because they like to take a long sentence to describe something, don't they?
Oh, I see. So
more
you're,
so.
More so. Why are we talking about America?
I don't know.
Let me give. I'll have that dress. So Lily's here. Am I allowed to say that?
Yes, Lily's here. Lily's my daughter. Here.
Mary's daughter's here.
Yeah, goth, in case you haven't noticed.
I know, you're so good. Look at your skin. Honestly, I really... And Ellie to my right, I've got a real issue with young people.
Oh, I have all the time.
Yeah. Who do they think they are?
Well, the problem is, I find, I put my makeup on and do my hair and everything. I think, oh, I look quite nice. And then I get on the tube and there's someone about 20 with no makeup on, doesn't need any makeup, looks gorgeous, legs up to...
Cockfosters.
Yes. And I just think, oh, I thought I looked great and now I've just seen that.
Yeah, but you know what? Stupid.
Oh, that's...
Yeah.
And probably can't sing.
No! Can't sing, stupid. Let's
the first time I saw Naomi Campbell in the flesh, she's like a gazelle. I've never seen a body like it. It's amazing. And I was thinking, oh, please don't say she can sing. And of course, she made a record and she proved that she definitely couldn't. So thank God for that.
There is a God. There's not a God. Let me give you a proper introduction. Blimey, Mary, I'm trying to be professional today and you've just jumped straight in with the chat. Ellie.
Hello, sort her out.
Just sort her out. Sort the guests out. I'm going to put that... barely that. I'm putting your mic up. Poor Ellie, she's been through quite a lot today. You haven't got a mic, Lily.
No, Lily hasn't. She's just smiling.
Just smiling. Welcome.
Thank you.
The Neasden Queen of Soul, Miss Beehive. Every time I get that wrong, Miss Beehive, 1982. Nymphette of the Nail Varnish and my Twitter crush. It's Mary Wilson. You are so funny on Twitter.
Oh, well.
You really make me laugh at it. I kind of picture you
drunk. You make me laugh. You make me laugh constantly. I'm always howling at your comments
Tweets.
Get it right, Mary.
Get it right. Tweets. No, I'm too... are you sticking with Mary rather than Mari? You know that confuses people.
Yeah, no, it's Mary. It's always been Mary. It's never been Mari.
Okay.
It's one of those names... I'm sure I mentioned this to you before, actually, where people... You know, you're at a party or something and you introduce yourself, you say, hi, I'm Mary. And they go, oh, you mean Marie? Like, I don't know my own name. Like, oh, yeah, it must be Marie. No, it's not Marie. There's no E on the end. And watch my lips. Mary. Rhymes with Harry. So, yes, it's Mary.
That's how I remember it. Rhymes with Harry. So you've got an amazing gig coming up. So Mary Wilson, 35th anniversary concert at Bush Hall, Sunday, June 4th. So it's been 35 years. And it's just what I always wanted.
It's just what I've always wanted.
I can't believe that.
Yeah.
Does it feel like that?
Yeah.
37, 38.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what's really weird. Is if I see an old picture or an old video or something on YouTube or whatever, I almost don't know who that person is. It's really quite strange because it didn't go on for that. I mean, it went on for like 4 years, 5 years, that period of my life. And then I went into jazz, which, of course, is the kiss of death. It's the most uncommercial music. And I disappeared into the world of jazz. But that's what gave me my chops, actually.
Yeah.
So I was kind of doing that and playing live. The great thing about playing live with the jazz on the jazz scene was it wasn't about a product. you know, you didn't have to be out there promoting a new, you didn't have to make any albums, because it's about the live medium.
Yeah.
You know?
But you did that only for 4 or 5 years, but the impact.
Yeah.
I mean, that changed your life.
It did. It's totally.
So extraordinary. So I've been having loads of DMs, some I can mention, some I can't, marry Wilson. No. But loads about you, about, oh my God, she's so hot, da 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 da. All the boys love you.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the gay ones, though. They love me for a different reason.
No.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. But all, you know, oh God, I love this. And then who's it? Kath Mulandry, amazing BBC presenter, Kath Mulandry. She went, isn't... I've seen Mary Wilson tweeting. I went, yeah. She went, oh my God. And then got her phone out and had Beat the Beat, Just What I Always Wanted. Like, you know.
Oh, wow.
So
that's brilliant.
You really struck a chord.
Well, I think what happened was we came, or I say we, because it was a huge band. I had a 12-piece band. And it was quite unusual because we were just coming out of, we just finished like the punk thing. And then we had bands like, you know, the Pretenders. And, you know, so she was very kind of with her jeans and her guitar. And I mean, dead sexy, but a different kind of look, obviously, to mine. And I remember having the conversation with Todd Taylor, who wrote Just What I've Always Wanted, in the studio, saying, well, I want to do some gigs. And he said, well, you're going to have a massive band to recreate this sound. I said, well, I'll have a massive band then. Really bad decision if you want to make money.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But never mind. But we did have a lot of laughs. And so suddenly I appeared with this huge beehive and kind of 50s, 60s style clothes and this massive band. And it was all very tongue-in-cheek. You know, the girls were called Cinderella and Barbarella. They changed. There was Mandy and Candy, Cinderella and Barbarella. Because, you know, very high turnover of personnel. And then the three boys, which was Hank Beehive, Kurt Lamore and Wilbur G. Force. They were the three things. And then the band were called Harry, Larry, Barry, Gary, Carrie and Jim. So that was, you know, we weren't obviously taking it too seriously. And the dancing was a bit rough, you know, it wasn't great, the choreography. But I think that's why people liked it, because there was an honesty about it.
And I think you're totally right. And it really, it just resonated, yeah. And maybe as an antidote to whatever the other stuff that was going on, just a bit
And everyone got dressed up, yeah. You know, as that happened in the 80s with lots of bands, you know, with Culture Club and... Human League and bands like that. Everyone dressed up, but they dressed up usually without the aid of a sort of stylist. You know, I mean, stylists did exist, but I had my own look. I just went to jumble sales and charity shops. Yeah. You know,
I love charity shops.
Yeah. But now, of course, the good stuff, you've got to be getting there quick to get the good stuff. But back then, nobody wanted 50s and 60s clothes.
Yeah.
And I got loads of stuff and kneesed in Sea Scouts. Why is there a Sea Scout in these
days? Some questions you don't ask.
No, best. And they used to put things aside for me before the jumble sale. And the first dress I wore on TV was on Riverside, and it was a 20 pence blue Lurex number. And so I think that's why. And also the songs were good songs, you know, melodic and
What are your memories of recording Just What I Always Wanted?
Oh, well, I tell you what I was wearing. I know what I was wearing. I was wearing a pink, you know, like mohair, that shiny, you know, so it's not furry mohair, but it's mohair, like a mohair suit, that kind of material. And it was bright pink, and it was a dress and a jacket. Do you remember that? Dresses with jackets.
I love that.
That was a charity shop find. And pointy high heels, stilettos. I know I was wearing that. And we recorded it at Pete Townsend's place, Eel Pie Studios by Eel Pie Island on the river.
Yeah.
I was always making everyone tuna fish sandwiches. It was like my job to make the tuna fish sandwiches for everybody.
Your job was to be the star.
Well, you know. And I remember Todd Taylor and me, I think, together doing, you know, ba 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 ba. And all these different, you know, kind of backing vocals. It was a right laugh. And then, of course, it got all my singles were raved about on Roundtable. And then this one was reviewed and people didn't really like it.
Oh.
And then it became my biggest hit. So.
Oh, that's weird, isn't it? But 35 years ago, and we're going to celebrate it. And the Bush Hall concert will... We'll discuss that fully later. Mm-hmm. We'll include all the hits, obviously. But also, Mary's latest critically acclaimed album, Pop Deluxe, which I love as well.
Thank you.
It's such a great album. It's so gorgeous. We see Mary a lot live and we love her. She'll be performing songs from that as well. And this one, so I said to Mary, what are you going to play? Tell us what you want us to play from the set. And when we came to see it, the RV team, I'm talking about me and Producer Nick. Oh, Producer Nick, by the way, isn't here because he's back in rehab.
Oh, yes. Fair enough.
I mean, I don't know. I hope I'm not coming across as insensitive when I say that.
No.
But, you know, stop drinking, Nick.
He's here.
He's...
Poor
Nick.
Poor Nick. Is it alcohol?
I think mainly.
Mainly, yeah.
Tipex and alcohol. And when we came to see at the RBT, I think before or after, obviously, around playing the song, you said that the bloke in your band's dad had written this.
Yes, my guitarist, James Nisbet, his father, Ben Nisbet, because I sent a YouTube link to my guitarist because he's in his 40s and I thought, he's not going to know this song. And I said, you better learn this because we're going to be doing this, you know. And he wrote back, he said, I don't need to learn it. My dad wrote it. I know it. It was like, what are the chances? And what a great story for me to tell on stage. Because I always need new ones. But as you can tell, I don't have any trouble talking.
Let's play White Horses.
On white horses let me ride away to my world of dreams so far away. Let me run to the sun, to a world my heart can understand. It's a gentle, warm and wonderland far away. Stars away, where the clouds are as the day is born. When the stars are gone, we'll race to meet the dawn. So when I can only see the grey of a sad and very lonely day, that's when I softly sigh. On white horses, snowy white horses, let me ride away. To the sun, to a world my
so gorgeous.
Aww. That's a bus in Bethnal Green that you can hear at the end that we recorded. Yeah, we decided to put a bus on there.
I'm not asking.
No.
I'm not asking. No. You should have the follow-up questions as a journalist, but I'm barely that, so I'm not even going to ask. You've got such a classic English quality to your voice.
Have I?
Yeah. It's so... I just love it. It's really pure, but with soul, but not affected soul.
Oh, good.
That's a huge compliment.
It bloody well is, yeah.
Yeah.
I love the way you said that, though. It's a huge compliment.
Because I have a way of upsetting people when I'm trying to be nice.
Yeah, I know
so
what
I
you mean.
So I just needed to kind of get that in.
Yeah.
My sense of humour, a few quotation marks there is apparently. I'm not that nice. So you had such a time in like the early mid-80s. It was incredible. So 6 hit singles, hit album, show people. So from then to now, what do you think have been your kind of pinch me moments, your career highlights that you were like, what?
Oh, okay. There's a few. Playing the Ritz in New York in 1983 on our American tour, and it was packed, and it was... It's a funny thing, you know, when you're trying to get somewhere as a singer and making records and everything, it's the bit before it all happens and the beginning of when it happens that is the best.
Yeah.
And you never ever get that feeling back again because it's already happened. It's like, I don't know what you could compare it to, like having never fallen in love and then you fall in love, you know, maybe. But it's that beginning bit that's so exciting. And we were on tour in America. We played the Ritz and I did 3 encores and I did a costume change for each encore because I did a ridiculous amount of costume changes. And I remember going backstage and Howard Hewitt from Shalimar was there. And I was walking around in my bra and knickers and I was wearing stockings. And, of course, he was, you know,
also
bouncing
in stockings.
Around. Yeah. So in fact, someone sent me, my hairdresser Peter found the picture of me in my underwear, which I've now got on my phone, and I look at it and I think, who is that girl? Who's that girl with like that tiny waist for a bloody start? Anyway, so that was a real fantastic moment. It was just a very, very special gig, and it was like, I just thought, yeah, this is sort of my moment, really, you know, not in a Martine McCutcheon my moment, not that kind of way, but in a way of like, wow, this is the pinnacle, you know, this is great. Because always for me, playing live and having a great gig, a special gig, because it's, you can't repeat it, you can't record it. I don't really like live albums because I just think, no, I'd rather hear a properly recorded album and go and see somebody live. So there's that. There's Paul McCartney introducing me to Michael Jackson. I mean, really, you couldn't make it up, could you?
And hang on, so that was that at the Ivan Abellas? If I made
no,
that up?
No, that was at the, it was called the BPI Awards at the time, it's now called the Brits, and it was at Grosvenor House in a small ballroom, and it was only industry people, it wasn't open to the public or anything, it was a small affair, you know, and he was there, and I remember I walked in with my manager, and Paul and Linda, first name term, Paul and Linda and Michael were on the table kind of over there. And we were walking in and they were putting their thumbs up and going, we're rooting for you. And I was looking behind me and my manager said, they're talking to you, you twit. I went, oh. I said, oh, thanks, you know. But anyway, Kim Wilde won Best Singer.
Carry on with your story.
So anyway, so we're at the bar later on. And
I've got a story about Kim Wilde.
Right, good. Linda McCartney... comes over and says, could I have my picture taken with you? What? You're saying that to me? Yes, of course. So I had the picture taken with her and everything.
Tell me that was going on in your head, but what you actually said was, well, give me a minute, Liz.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I said, and you are?
Yeah.
And then I was talking to Paul because I'd met Paul once before. The Buddy Holly, he owns Buddy Holly's back catalogue, and they had this dance thing going on at Hammersmith Palais or somewhere. And I was told Paul McCartney was going to be there. So I took all my records that I'd made so far, my singles and stuff, in a carrier bag. And I went up to him and I said, excuse me, I've got all your records, so I'd like you to have all of mine. And I handed him this carrier bag.
And did you ask for the backpack?
Should have, shouldn't I? Or 5p anyway. So he was there, and I said, I think Michael had gone to the loo, and I said, oh, you couldn't introduce me to Michael, could you? And he went, yeah, sure. And he came back and he just said, Michael, this is Mary Wilson. Mary, this is Michael. And he just went, hi, pleased to meet you. And that was it, really.
And did he say, "You sure it's not Marie?"
Yeah, yeah. But he it was just as Thriller was going to break.
Oh,
so it was
my
just
God.
When he was still kind of normal, really, you know. And and of course, we didn't have phones then, so there were no selfies, or I haven't got a picture.
So we've got to take your word for that.
Yeah,
get Paul McCartney up. On the phone. Get him on the phone. You know what I think is so brilliant? That you were saying when you were flashing Shalimar Man.
Yes.
I loved Shalimar. And oh. I was listening to There It Is on the way in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I went out with Jeffrey.
What?
For a few months. I went out with Jeffrey Daniel. Can you imagine the two of us walking around London? It was fantastic. Him with his hair and tallness and me with my beehive. Yeah, it was great.
Oh, my yeah. God. Look
yeah,
at you.
I know. What am I like, eh?
Who else have you been out with?
Well, I'll tell you when we're off air, maybe.
Who have you kissed?
I did spend some time...
Sorry,
with
Lily.
I did spend some time with a bald man. And I remember when we got back to when we got back to the room, I said to it, because I had my beehive in, and I thought, oh, what am I going to do? I'm going to end up looking like I've had an electric shock if I don't brush this out. And I said, you haven't got a comb or anything, have you? And he just looked at me and went, hardly, because he was bald. I'll tell you who it was later.
Oh, my God. What's so lovely is when you were flashing Shalimar, that you said that at the time you were aware that you kind of had that knowledge then. That it was great. So I worked at Strong Room forever ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah, and I loved that studio so much. And I never enjoyed the moment. I was fat with the perms. I mean, there's a limit to what I can enjoy. But well, apart from cake, evidently.
Yes,
but
obviously.
ammonia-based hair products and cake. But now looking back, I'm like, oh, babe, that was an extraordinary time.
Yeah.
But I was so full of angst. But you felt it when you were in it.
I did feel it, yeah. And I can feel it now when I think about it. I remember, you know, I remember the feeling. And it couldn't possibly happen again because I'm already, I mean, I'm not massively known, but I'm already known. I've already had the famous thing. So it's just before it's happening. And there's, you know, like when the first time we played at Dingwalls, and the guy who ran it, who sadly I don't think he's around anymore. His name was Boss, and we got there, and there was a queue all the way out and down into the street. And he said, "This is the biggest crowd we've had since Blondie played here."
Oh my God!
And there were loads of guys up with Parkers on scooters and all that. And I just thought, wow, something's happening here. You know, it was something was happening, and I could feel it. And it was there was something natural about it as well, because it was the vibe of the band, you know. So although it was my voice and everything, it really was down to all of them as well, you know.
The Wilsations.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so brilliant. It's so brilliant. Is it... Who was the most disappointing person you met? You're allowed to say names on Soho Radio. We encourage
yeah.
it. Or the nicest, then. The greatest, the most disappointing.
Oh, God. Gosh, that's difficult. I mean, there's been a lot of, you know... When I met Annie Lennox, we talked about periods. That's what we ended up talking about, because she's quite deep, you know. So I remember that.
I don't think we can
Lily,
top that.
Lily, who have I met that I've said, oh, he was just fantastic, or he was a miserable so-and-so? Has there been any of that?
My dad.
Oh, there you go. There you go. There's the... Lily's got her own show on Soho. Well done, Lily. Is it fun now, though?
Yeah, and I tell you
why. I bet it's kind of pressure off.
Yeah, pressure off. And also there's that thing. I've just started reading this book. You have to read it. It's called... oh, my God. It's in my bag. It's called... it's by someone called Sheila Nevins. And you'll love it. I'll grab it in a minute.
Yeah.
But basically, what I think is great about... I'll be 63 in...
No
September.
Way.
Yeah, that was the right thing to say. But it is true that when you get older, you really don't really care what people think anymore, you know. I mean, not to the point where you want to walk around insulting people and being nasty, but that's really nice. When you're young, you do care about what people think. And I know that when I was, you know, a, quote, pop star, I did worry about that, you know, if someone didn't like me. Although sometimes I could be quite outrageous. I mean, I went up to... what was the guy in? This is the problem with names that I can't remember. You know, the Irish band, my cousin Kevin, My Perfect Cousin.
Not Buzzcocks.
No.
Oh, God, what was his name? And then he went Fergal
Sharpie.
Yes.
I had a festival, and I probably had a couple of drinks. I did go up to him and say, my God, you're not nearly as ugly as you look on the telly. I mean, what a terrible thing to say. I would never do something like that now. But, I mean, that's how stupid I was. And I did a show called Saturday Review, and I had to go and review Elvis Costello's concert, which was fantastic. But on the show, and they said, what was the concert like? And I said something like, you know, who would think that a man who is kind of short, fat and wears glasses could write such great songs and blah, blah, blah. And then 2 weeks later, I did a Band the Bomb concert, and he was doing it, and he came up to me and said, do I look particularly short, fat and ugly today?
No.
I felt terrible. I thought, Mary, you idiot.
I'm like, yeah, but...
I was only being kind of lighthearted, but sometimes... You know, maybe if someone had said that about me, I would have been upset. So stuff like that, I think, oh, you're a bit of a twit for doing that. But it's what you do when you're young, isn't it?
Well, I still do it. So not just when you're young. I think you're going to love this song. And if you don't, if you love it, I chose it. And if you don't, producer Ellie. can we play this one? Sweet Inspirations. Sweet Inspiration by the Sweet Inspirations. So I've just seen Mary Wilson's bits.
Well, kind of. Well, they were covered up, though, weren't they?
Well, unfortunately, yes. Mary showed me the photo, the Flash Shalimar Man photo. What was his name?
Howard Hewitt.
Howard Hewitt.
He came in the... Okay, he came in the
Finish
dressing
that sentence
room
quickly.
Yeah, he came in the dressing room. He came into the dressing room. He walked into the dressing room, is what I mean. And there I was in all my finery, in my black and red...
I'm wearing suspenders. Do you know what I'm about? The pop sock. And that's why I'm single.
The pop sock. Do they still exist, pop socks?
Look at me. No, do they? Do they? I don't know.
Yeah, they weren't a very nice thing.
They weren't a very nice thing. Are you okay with the kind of saucy underwear?
Yeah, I like to wear nice underwear,
do
don't you?
I guess.
But big knickers are back, aren't they? And they're always comfy, especially when you're wearing a dress. I think
I like knickers that are so that you can stretch them up so much you can kind of cover your chin as well.
Oh, that yeah. Oh, don't get me talking about chins.
Don't. Shall I?
I want something done about this. You know. This saggy stuff here, what is that?
You look so gorgeous. I will look at... I'll take your picture of you in your undies, and I'm going to put that as my profile picture and see what happens. Producer Ellie, quickly tell Mary Wilson what you did.
What did I do?
When on Valentine's Day.
Oh, okay. So
yeah, listen to this. Listen to this, Lily.
I printed my buttocks on a pillow for my boyfriend.
Oh my goodness, so that his head is on your ass most evenings.
Yeah.
Big pillow for his bed.
How brilliant is that?
His mum came in and said, oh, that's so artistic. No, it's my bum.
That's great.
I think it's disgusting. Don't encourage that.
Well, she's young though, you see. Yeah, it's what young peeps do, isn't it?
You got it, Florence.
Yeah, all right, love.
For my 60th, a friend of mine did the Just What I've Always Wanted sleeve onto a cushion, which we've now got in our lounge.
Aww.
Yeah. It's lovely, isn't it, Lils? We don't sit on it.
We won't sit on it. No. My brothers, Dan and Pat, I had a real thing. I know this is your hour, but you know. I for several Christmases in a row, bought them like Christmas decorations with my photo inside.
Oh.
I think that's sweet.
Yeah.
And then I threatened to get duvet covers and everything and pillowcases with my gorgeous, big old freckly face. My brothers.
I got freckles too.
Have you?
Yeah. I used to get loads of freckles when I was young on my face. Yeah. Yeah. Lily, of course, has never been in the sun in her life.
I know.
She hates the sun, but she can light the way wherever we are with that white face.
I'll sit in the sun for about 5 minutes, then I'll be like, no, and I'll just throw a towel over me.
Yeah, she doesn't like the sun. But well, I mean, that means when she's 50, she's going to look about 20.
Yeah, I know. And Lily, I don't want to dislike you because, you know, you're adorable and you're Mary's daughter. But that's going to wind me up.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
I know. It winds me up.
Do you know what I used to do in the sun? Literally put lard on me and then put tin foil so it was reflected on me.
Oh, like the tin foil thing? Yes. People used to do...
Yes.
No. What? Yes, people used to put tin foil on.
Never heard of that.
Well, then you're not a real Italian. That's all I'm saying.
Yes.
A room full of liars. Get Paul McCartney on the phone. I want to clarify that story. Do you write songs?
I do, yeah.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. In fact, I can tell you something very interesting. Well, yes, I mean, my albums, Emotional Glamour and Dolled Up, they've got all my own songs on. So I don't write all the time, but I kind of go through phases like my next album is going to be original songs. I've already started writing stuff for that because I can't do another covers album. but my husband, Mal Young, because my name now is Mary Wilson Young. Isn't that sweet?
Aww.
Well, my full name is Mary McMillan Ramsey Wilson Young, actually.
That's just showing off.
Yeah, it is. So he produces The Young and the Restless in America, which is a big soap that's been running forever.
Which is an incredible...
I know, it's massive.
Well, but Mal Young's an incredible talent anyway.
Yeah,
That's a massive job.
So he asked me if I would write a song for... I mean, I can't say too much about it because it's in the... You know, it hasn't run yet.
Yeah.
The storyline hasn't run. But suffice to say, I have written a song for The Young and the Restless.
Whoa, and what did you rhyme with BB?
See me. Please come see me,
please come see me, BB. My uncle calls me BB the wee wee.
Well, I could say, please come see me, BB. Have a wee wee. And we'll have a cup of tea.
Oh, this is lovely. This is going places.
It is, isn't
now
it?
Now it's worth doing the show.
Yeah.
let's talk more about the concert. So we've got all the hits. So Beat the Beat.
Beat the Beat.
Love the
Baby It's True.
Cry Me a River.
Cry Me a River.
Are you doing Cry Me a River?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wonderful, which I love that one. Are You There With Another Girl? You know, some stuff from Pop Deluxe. We're going to do Love Man. Which is my first single, actually, Love Man. And I haven't done it since probably about 1983.
Oh, what?
So that's going to be good fun.
And the full band?
I've got the full band. I mean,
the Wilsations?
I've got eight. Plus me, there's nine of us.
What?
So, no, not the Wilsations, because most of them aren't musicians anymore. But I have got Hank Beehive as the MC. So he's going to whip everyone up into a frenzy at the beginning. So I've got Hank Beehive. I've got Barry Wilsation, who was the original sax player.
Yeah.
So he's going to be playing sax.
Amazing.
And a trumpet player called Dave Land, who wasn't a Wilsation, but I have worked with him before. And I've got two girlies, Phoebe and Lucy, who are going to be doing backing singing. And have I told you who my special guest is?
Well, do you know what? It was so funny. So when you did a tweet about it, and I was going, she spelt that wrong. I was going, oh, no, it's deliberate. So yes. Tell me who the tweets are. God, there's Nikki Baidy's face at the window. Oh,
hello.
And Silas Armstrong. Hello, gorgeous. And George. Yeah. Hi, George. All the beautiful boys.
Oh, yes.
And that was Nikki Baidy. Sorry, Mary, you was right in the middle of something. That Nikki Baidy, she's so, that's so her.
Just what, pushing in?
Pushing in.
Yeah,
yeah, go on. So,
what was I saying? Oh, yeah, so my special guest is, because I just was in his new video for his new single, which is great actually, and because I was in a video, one of his videos in 1983 or whenever it was, and this person is Mark Almond.
Oh my God!
And we're going to be doing a couple of songs together, so I can't wait actually.
That is going to be absolutely brilliant.
Campus Christmas, isn't it? I can't wait.
Do you think?
Well, it'll be dramatic.
It'll be dramatic
and glamorous, and that's what I want. I want it to be really glamorous, and so yeah.
That's good. Brilliant. Yeah. I can't wait. We're going to play a song. I wrote this one as well.
Right.
And then we'll talk more about the gig.
Stars all the way from here. Can't you see?
Beyonce channeling me there, Mary. Well, how many key changes?
I don't know, about 42, I think.
God, I love a key change.
Yeah.
Do you have key changes in the songs you write? Say yes. Say three.
Yeah, do we?
You've got to. Why?
Oh, I tell you why I do. We have a key change in Am I the Same Girl? Okay. You know that dusty song?
No, sing
why
it, sing
don't
it.
You stop and think it over? Okay, yeah. You know that one?
Yeah.
Am I the same girl? Yes, I am. Yes, I am. That one. We have a key change in that. I don't know where else I have a key change. I don't know. You like to key change down when you get to my age.
I like to sit down,
yes.
Key change down.
Yes. Well, it was like this, my down. Gig the, at Bush Hall. People were going, oh, well, we haven't got a stand, have we? These were most of my friends who are my age. Because we could have had it standing and had more people and I would have made more money. But we thought, no, well, I can't expect my fans to, you know. There will be some standing. If you don't get there on time, there's probably going to be maybe 20 people standing at the back. But there'll be a bit of dancing going on anyway.
Are you, and I'm sensing many costume changes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure what I'm going to open with.
Yeah.
I love all that. I go upstairs and I go, oh, I've got to get everything out and try it all on.
Do you blag free stuff?
No, I don't actually. Not these days. Nobody wants to give me free stuff now.
Right, that's it. Ellie, get on that.
You've got to be in the charts for that.
We know people.
Got to be in the hit parade.
In the hit parade.
Yes.
Bubbling under.
Yes. In with a bullet.
Oh, good Lord. Well, we're going to get you something lovely. What do you want? Mules?
Mules.
Yes.
And I could do with a new handbag, but of course, that's not. You don't really use that on stage,
do you?
I could
do with a nice raincoat.
Yes, that'd be good.
Oh, a lovely trench.
Yeah.
So you know, producer Nick.
You know,
he's in rehab.
In rehab, yeah.
I often gift him the gift of music. Lily, when you come to work with me, you may get that gift sometime. A chorus, middle eight, could be yours. I don't know. You may.
She's
even
a great singer, Lily.
No, I bet you. Are you?
She plays piano and guitar better than me. Yeah.
What?
She's
good. Oh, look.
Oh, she's so shy. She's
so cute. We'll come back to you in a minute, Lily. You're going to sing. So I have gifted producer Ellie the gift of music this time, as opposed to Nick, who's, you know, in a gutter somewhere. So producer, what kind of song do you think Ellie would have chosen? Country and Western? Pavarotti? Now she's apparently Italian.
No. Male or female?
I think. Well, Ellie's a female, right. I think.
Oh.
Okay, basically, the whole genre today was kind of like Motown, soul.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, yeah.
I'm flipping it out.
Oh, she's ruined my day.
Yeah. I'm doing house. But
Hugh song, Laurie?
Yeah. I don't know what
the lyrics,
these things mean.
Hugh Laurie!
The lyrics are for you. Because Nick isn't here, so I've come in.
Yeah.
And you listen to the lyrics.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, lady, you be careful. Play it. If I hate it, you're out.
Is it the same as dubstep?
Mary, please be quiet.
Electric, yeah.
Please be quiet, Wilson.
I only know quick steps.
Wilson, shush.
Not really. I'd race through the night, run all the lights to be by your side. Break down doors, smash through walls to be by your side. All you have to do is say that you need me, I'll be by your side. Doesn't matter how far I'll get to you, I'll be by your side. Send up a flare, anytime you're scared, I'll be by your side. Draw it in the sand, I'll hold up your hand, I'll be by your side. All you have to do is say that you need me, I'll be by your side. Doesn't matter how far I'll get to you, I'll be by your side. So don't be scared, I'm always on high alert. I'm always on high alert.
to be by your side. All you have to do is say that you need me, I'll be by your side. Doesn't matter how far I'll be to you, by your side. So don't be scared, I'm always on high alert. I'm always on high alert. And I got you, I got you. So don't be scared, I'm always on high alert. Always on high alert. And I got you, I got you.
Our producer Ellie did good there. Tell me what that was, Ellie.
That was High Alert by Netsky.
Oh, well done you. I need to say goodbye and thank my guests. Thank you, Raffaella Degratola, for updates on all Raff's amazing work. Follow him on Twitter at Raff Degratola. Thank you, Mary Wilson and Lily.
Thank you, Bibi.
Mary Wilson's 35th anniversary concert is at Bush Hall, Shepherd's Bush, Sunday, June the 4th. Go to bushhallmusic.co.uk for ticket information. Also visit marywilson.co.uk for updates on all her exciting projects and follow her on Twitter at Miss Beehive for total Twitter loveliness. Thank you, producer Ellie. Thank you. And stop drinking, producer Nick. And most of all, thank you for listening and joining in. That's it from me, Bibi Lynch. Until next time, stay tuned to your wonderful Soho radio. And I'll leave you with that temptress, Janet Jackson, and Special. Love you, Soho. Love you, Manchester. Bye. Since